Good afternoon. Welcome to the New Capital Show. I'm Leo Gold, your host. Great to be with you as always. Hope you're having a great day on March 1st. As we have a nice warm day in Houston, and you can sense the coming onslaught of summer out there. But until then, it remains reasonably tolerable. The phone number here is 713-526-5738, 526-KPFT. And this is going to be mostly a call-in show today. I don't usually talk about presidential politics on this show, you know, as the focus of the show. But I think I want to do that today because there's just kind of a lot been going on and not much else. One interesting business piece of news today, AT&T is effectively ending unlimited data plans, saying that it will no longer let customers use more than a set amount of data per month without a penalty. So those days are over. Unlimited data is over on AT&T. I don't have all the details here, but that's the headline from about 39 minutes ago. I'm on an unlimited AT&T data plan for my iPhone, and I have absolutely almost no reception in my home. I live in the center of the city near Rice University, and I have almost no reception, and I pay for that. And now I'm going to get to pay even more for that type of quality service. Listen, you can't win with these telecom guys. And of course, we know whose fault it all is, right? It's the president's fault, right? It's the president's fault that the unlimited data plan is going away. It's the president's fault that my reception is poor in my house, because of course, it's the president's fault that gas prices are now pushing up or are approaching $5, right? It's his fault as well. And today he has announced, Helene Cooper of New York Times reports, that he is calling for an end to subsidies for oil and gas companies of $4 billion. Listen, you'd have to go a lot farther than $4 billion to get rid of all the subsidies that go into the oil and gas business. As I've talked about so often, you would have to recall, you know, half of U.S. military forces from the Middle East, or rather all the military forces from the Middle East, which represents some very large amount of U.S. forces worldwide. I don't know, call it 25% or 33%. You'd have to withdraw those forces, or you would have to send a bill from the military to the oil companies to pay for that security escort service. Right, it's their escort service, so that the full cost of oil could be priced at the pump. Now, that's not what the president has in mind here. He has in mind these direct subsidies that are in the tax code, and he says, or Helene Cooper reports, with his election fate increasingly tied to the price Americans are paying at the gas pump. So I want to hear from you on that today. Is that the case? Do you believe that the president's reelection hinges and is predicated on the price of gas? Is that right? I'm wondering what other people think of that, because she comes flat out with this statement here. With his reelection fate increasingly tied to the price Americans are paying at the gas pump, President Obama called on Congress to end $4 billion in subsidies for oil and gas companies and vowed to tackle the country's long-term energy issues while shunning, quote, phony election year promises about lower gas prices. God, do we go through this every single damn election? We elect presidents on oil prices. It's insane. Mr. Obama, in an appearance at Nashua Community College here, and this is in Nashua, New Hampshire, there's a picture. They're all standing around in the snow. God, the weather's really different up there than here. So he was in an appearance at Nashua Community College. He took a page out of his Jobs strategy of last year, calling on Americans to contact their congressional representatives and demand a vote on the oil subsidies. Well, first of all, if you repeal subsidies, theoretically, it would have the effect of raising oil prices, right? I mean, that's the theory. So I'm not sure this is intended to reduce oil prices. I think it's intended really more to counterpose the president against the oil companies in the election. He says, Mr. Obama says, you can either stand up for the oil companies or you can stand up for the American people. You can keep subsidizing a fossil fuel that's been getting taxpayer dollars for a century, or you can place your bets on a clean energy future. And so on. I mean, we've all heard this oil politics, for as long as we've been alive. And we in the United States, of course, pay some, right now, what, $4 and something for gas? And you go to other parts of the world, Europe especially, and gas prices are much higher there. The president also, in today's comments, mentioned something that I thought it's about time that he hits. The article says that he aggressively tackled Republicans who have called for the country to increase its own oil production. And frankly, that's happening. Right? I mean, we're seeing lots of natural gas drilling and also along with that more oil drilling, although mostly the new drilling is natural gas drilling. But the president says, with the United States consuming more than 20% of the world's oil while having only 2% of the world's oil reserves, Mr. Obama said we cannot rely on fossil fuels from the last century. That's exactly right. We have 2% of the world's oil reserves. We consume 20% of the world's oil. And the president is correct to point out to people that that is an unsustainable situation. So that's one of my questions to you today. Is the president's reelection tied, dependent on the price of oil? Is that your sense of it? Is it your sense that the electorate at large is going to hold the president accountable for wherever gas is now and leading up to the election? I'm not sure. I mean, I just don't know. I don't hold him responsible for it. The price of oil is set on a world market. It's dependent upon so many variables, and many variables that the United States doesn't control, and certainly the president doesn't control. Doesn't seem to me that the president is responsible for the price of gasoline on a month-to-month, week-to-week basis. Doesn't seem to me that way. Does it seem to other people that way? Or really, is it just an excuse for people who were not going to vote for the president to just go ahead and do that anyway? 713-526-5738. And then the next question relates to yet another article from Helene Cooper, who I guess, she's the reporter for the Times who's covering the president. This is a piece from a few days ago. President offers theme of nation seeing a comeback. President Obama has a new message. America has gotten its groove back. In ways large and small, Mr. Obama has seized on a narrative of national optimism in recent weeks, offering a portrait of a country that, guided by him and powered by the American worker, is making a comeback. And by the way, the president made an appearance in front of the United Auto Workers the other day, gave a very vigorous speech. I don't know, Doyle, maybe you can find that. The president made a speech to the UAW, maybe a little bit later in the show we'll play that, of a couple of days ago. I think it must have been around February 28th. So Doyle will go out and find that. Maybe we'll play it a little bit later so you can hear. But it was a pretty vigorous speech. You know, it sounded like the old Obama. And that's what this article is referring to, is that this strategy that's being rolled out by the president and his advisors has Mr. Obama playing the role of a sunny optimist. And Helene Cooper says this is a narrative with strong echoes of President Ronald Reagan's 1984 reelection campaign. Remember Reagan with Morning in America? One that is intended to provide a contrast with today's less sunny Republican candidates. Right? Now, you know, I don't know if you've been watching the Republican candidates, but they don't seem too sunny in their presentations these days. And so the strategy that's being pursued by the president now is that of a sunny optimist, almost Reagan-like, America has gotten its groove back. And of course, this strategy is meant to suggest that Mr. Obama himself has hit his own stride, writes Helene Cooper. At this United Auto Workers conference, he says, I placed my bet on the American worker. He said, and the American auto industry is back, he said. In the State of the Union back in January, he also said, America is back. For Mr. Obama, the theme is intended to turn the country into something, to turn the country into something of a running mate. You got that? Meaning the country's going to be his running mate. While Mitt Romney, the Republican frontrunner and often unnamed foil in the president's speeches, may say the country has lost some of its global power and economic might, Mr. Obama remains full of hope and confidence in a strategy that harks back to his 2008 campaign. Now, Stanley Greenberg, who is the chief executive of Greenberg, Quinlan, and Rossner, a polling company that works with Democrats, says America's not back. We have long-term fundamental problems with respect to personal debt, etc. If you look at our data and history, it takes a long time before job numbers translate into accepting at a personal level that things are better. And yet, we have seen, you know, a fairly lengthy stream now of better employment numbers, better, you know, consumption numbers. Of course, as you know, I'm no fan of unbalanced consumption, and I firmly believe that our profile of expenditures in this country is totally overweighted toward consumption. I'm having a knockdown drag out battle with my wife right now over both of our kids are going to have birthdays in the next week, and I'm just tired of all the toys coming into our house. You know, and just the overblown consumption that exists now for small kids. I mean, it's always been there, but it just seems to me more than it ever was when I was growing up. And of course, that's not coincidental, right? 70% of our gross domestic product is related to consumption, and we have an utterly unbalanced economic profile, where we are not investing in infrastructure. Our infrastructure is falling apart. Just look at it in the city of Houston. You drive your car lately? Have you driven in the city? Right, of course, the freeways, oh, pristine. All paid for by the highway funds. But right, anytime we want to make our cities better, no money for that, right? No recycling. The streets are falling apart. Infrastructure's falling apart, public transportation, the rest of it. So, at any rate, in the past few months, we've seen better employment numbers. We're actually seeing 2 to 3% growth in gross domestic product. So, the president is starting to feel like things are turning his way. And the campaign has made the decision that they're going to go Reagan. So, my second question today, in addition, remember the first question was, is the president responsible for the oil price, and is his election effort going to turn on that? The second question is this a good strategy? Is going Reagan the way to go in this election? 713-526-5738. People want to talk about this. The phones are filling up. So why don't we just get right to it, Doyle? Can we do that? Yeah. Let's do it. Let's go straight to line one and take George. George, welcome. George, you there?
Yes, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. What do you think?
Well, I think oil is, you know, his reelection is tied to the price of gasoline insofar as that is going to be related to the continuing economic recovery.
Uh-huh.
It's employment, you know. Nothing really means much of anything to somebody who's unemployed.
So are you saying then that if we have high gas prices at election time, but employment numbers continue along their, you know, recent improvement? So you don't think that that's the sole variable?
No, not at all. But but now look, it's misinformation that's being put out there. First of all, I think the oil companies have kept the price of gasoline, as you kind of alluded to a minute ago, artificially low in this country for decades.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and we, you know, through military industrial complex and other ways.
That's news to ExxonMobil shareholders, George.
Well,
but at any rate.
And the right wing, look, they tried to put out all this misinformation. The other day I heard a Republican say that since Obama taken office, gasoline prices have increased 94%.
Uh-huh.
Well, what else occurred in 2008? Would be my question.
Yeah.
You know, at the same time, a complete economic meltdown.
Yeah.
You know, so I mean, that's. It's not morning in America. You know, that's, you know, Reagan was right insofar it was morning in America. It was a brand new dawn, and because in the early 70s we quit controlling the price of oil and OPEC, and you know, and we went into the red about the same time in this country as the oil crisis, you know, with Iran,
yeah,
and our lack of production
and George,
and, you know, our infrastructure. You're talking about our infrastructure. I was talking to a friend just last night. When is the next gas line going to blow up in somebody's neighborhood? These things that are running, I mean, thousands and thousands of miles right here, all over the country, right here in Texas, we've got, you know, they're dilapidated.
Mm-hmm. George, great to have you. Thanks for the call.
They're underground. All right. Appreciate it.
So George doesn't see it that this gas price is going to make it or break it alone for the president come November. He sees the other variable of employment is going to be at play. So there's one opinion. 713-526-5738. And the second question of the day, is this going Reagan by President Obama? And of course, his aides are not going Reagan. They're attacking the Republican candidates whenever they feel that it's necessary to do that, right? So the president's using his assistants, his henchmen, as it were, to do the dirty work while the president puts on a sunny face and says things are getting better. But I'm wondering, it seems to me that that's really not a bad strategy at all, that people are kind of tired of, you know, we've had 4 years of down in the dumps. And maybe people are ready for an optimistic leader. And I'm wondering if that's part of the calculation as well, because, of course, there must be some calculation going into it, right? Right. Line two is James. James, welcome to the New Capital Show.
And thank you for letting me come on.
You bet.
Listen, I think President Obama has one problem. He seems to think that the people, the nation has, is as intelligent as he is. So he has a lot of information, but he don't do a good job of explaining things to the American people, because that's what we people need, really, is a lot of explanation to different things, because it's things we don't understand, and he can do a better job of explaining.
Yeah.
And secondly, I hear a lot of explanation about the oil prices going up, different things, you know, from war to Iran, all that stuff, but nobody ever talks about the speculators, and I wish you could tell me about how much a percent do they play in it. And about Reagan, I don't know too much, but the thing I remember that I liked about Reagan when he said in his inaugural, he wanted a nation of producers and not a nation of consumers. So I remember him for that, and I think that's a good approach.
So are you saying, James, that you to the extent that the president is talking in optimistic tones about workers, which is really where his focus has been over the past few weeks,
that's
speaking
in
optimistic
about, uh-huh, about it, but he's not explaining it.
Uh-huh.
see, I mean, we hear a lot of stuff. That's why we hear from Republicans and we hear from Democrats too, but we nobody gives explanation. Republicans are good at putting stuff out there. They'll put a lie out there and say, oops, you know, but we need somebody, a leader that's going to give us an optimistic vision and explain how it's going to work.
Okay, great. Thanks, James. Right. Great to have you. Let me point out this piece again from the Helene Cooper article. She says that this appearance before the UAW for Mr. Obama was a punctuation of weeks of high profile outings in which he has spoken of American exceptionalism. Right? I mean, isn't this interesting? This idea of American exceptionalism that's heard all the time over on AM 740 and from people like Sean Hannity and Rush Limbaugh, you know, we are exceptional, that in some ways the president is trying to steal a march on that or to take that talking point and is speaking, as Helene Cooper puts it, in terms of American exceptionalism. She says, on the same day that Mr. Obama visited a Boeing plant in Everett, Washington, 2 weeks ago, and showcased Boeing's new 787 Dreamliner. And he said, it's lighter, it's faster, it's more fuel efficient than any airplane in its class, and it looks cool, said the president. The campaign released a report about the resurgence of the American manufacturers, arguing that Mr. Obama's stimulus plan helped American manufacturers to add nearly 400,000 jobs across the country. And the numbers really do reflect a rise in manufacturing activity in the country. And of course, the president has been focused in the past few weeks on Michigan, where the Michigan primary was just held on Tuesday and Mitt Romney squeaked by. Mitt Romney, who is from Michigan, Mitt Romney, whose father was the governor of Michigan and well liked there, Mitt Romney eked out a victory over Rick Santorum, who himself might have won the Michigan primary if he hadn't been such a jerk, right? A jerk. Taking these positions that he was taking, attacking John F. Kennedy, insisting that, you know, the president's wrong to want people to have college educations. I think a lot of people looked at that in the primary and said, wait a minute, that's just outright lunacy. And even in that situation where Rick Santorum was making those kinds of comments, Mitt Romney could only eke out a victory in Michigan. And of course, the big backdrop in the Michigan primary was the bailout of the automakers that began under George W. Bush but continued under President Obama, and didn't just continue. The president basically put the companies into bankruptcy, put GM into bankruptcy, and essentially pushed for Chrysler to be sold off and put into the management of Fiat, by Fiat. And at the time I told you that those reorganizations were going to be successful, I told you that back in the spring of 2009, and I was right. And they are turning out to be highly successful as these companies turn around. Now, to be sure, the restructurings were critical. But the restructurings happened at the behest of the president. The president, I think, rightfully can claim credit for having saved those companies and for having kept manufacturing afloat in Michigan and enabled us to get to a point where manufacturing, especially in the Midwest, where factories are being converted, factories that were building whatever machine parts for the auto companies are now maybe being turned to manufacturing things for alternative energy. I know there's a lot of that going on there. 713-526-5738. This is the New Capital Show. Next up is Mike. Mike, welcome.
Hey, Leo. How are you today?
I'm doing great. What's on your mind, Mike?
I read something that a friend of mine posted on Facebook.
Yeah.
It was a release by the Heritage Foundation, in which they do indeed blame President Obama for the gas prices.
Mm-hmm.
And they point to specifically two things. The number one is unwillingness to let us drill in our offshore waters. And in other places around our country, the emphasis on our, because we're trying to build consensus here, our land. Mm-hmm. And the veto of the Keystone XL pipeline. And, of course, the Heritage Foundation is a right-wing front group, et cetera, et cetera. But that's the kind of information that they're trying to disseminate and passing it off as truth.
Right. And the problem is, again, that the reserves of oil are simply not here in the United States. Even offshore, the reserves are simply not there. So, you know, we can impact supply of oil at the margin in the United States. But the price of oil is going to be set internationally by what goes on internationally. So, I mean, it's hard for me to see how the president is responsible for the price of oil.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, any president.
I heard an economist being interviewed, and I don't remember who it was now. And he said, really, the short-term spike in the price of gasoline that we're seeing is a result primarily of two things. Number one is, over the last year or so, the oil companies have increasingly been exporting more of their product.
Right. That's right.
A great portion of what their production is being sent overseas because, of course, they can make more money there.
Right. And in addition, natural gas is being shipped as well now. Well, the U.S. is exporting both of those.
And as a result, there's also been a lot of speculation in the futures commodity market about the price of oil based on what is expected to happen in Iran.
Mm-hmm.
And those two factors combined are really what's causing the increase in gasoline prices.
So my question to you, Mike, is will the public at large hold the president responsible if prices are high at election time?
No. The ones that already do will.
Yeah.
But so, I think in general, hopefully enough information will get out so people understand how price like that is fixed.
Okay. So another vote for no on the...
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would like to make a suggestion for your kids. I don't know how old they are, but assuming they're 5 years or older.
Yeah, 5 and 7.
I would suggest that you let them choose some toys that they own,
mm-hmm,
that are still in good shape and donate those toys to charity, to Salvation Army, Women and Children's Shelter, the organization I work for, and then they can have replacement toys.
Yeah, Mike, I try that all the time. I think I'm going to have you over my house to have that talk with them because they're not listening to me.
I can do it because I do it.
Yeah. Thanks. I think we're moving in that direction. We'll see if we can succeed. Mike, thanks for the call. 713-526-5738. This is the New Capital Show, newcapitalshow.com. You can find me on Twitter at New Capital Show and on Facebook as well under Leo Gold. And Teresa is up next. Teresa, welcome.
Hello?
Oh, is it Bruce?
Hi.
Sorry.
Thanks for taking my call.
I pushed the wrong button.
kind of echoing what the first caller said, I think you left out the last piece of the first question.
Mm-hmm.
If the rise in gasoline prices caused the economy to stall again, yeah, I think it could get rough for Obama, especially if he's running against Romney. Romney's going to be making veiled racist innuendos that the economy's just too complex for a black man to handle.
Uh-huh. Really?
And but if the economy keeps chugging along, I think he's going to slide through. And,
yep,
of course, on the second question, it sounds like Obama's strategists are predicting that the economy's going to keep improving. And if it does, then, yeah, that's the right strategy.
Yeah. It seems to me that they are being very canny and making a very strong contrast with the Republican candidates who are, you know, really, really not all that inspiring on the optimistic side of things. I mean, very much doom and gloom type of posture that these candidates are taking. And it seems to me that the president's strategic advisors have thought this through pretty carefully, and that it's quite a bit of upside. And it seems to me that it's making some headway with the general population. I don't know how you feel about it.
Yeah, I agree. Can I mention just one other thing?
Yeah.
On the National Geographic Channel, lately they've been having these promos for some new show coming up called Doomsday Preppers. Okay? And they're showing all these crazy people with their bomb shelters and their preserved food and their guns and stuff. Yeah. And I watched it, and I saw the longing and the hope of these people. And what it is, these people are longing for Armageddon because they think it's going to put the white man back on top.
Yeah. Okay, Bruce, thanks for the call. Great to have you.
Okay, bye.
Doyle, did we ever get that... did we ever get that thing queued up?
Yeah, we did, actually. And some of it is downloaded. It's a pretty long speech. We've got about...
No, I don't want the whole thing. Just, you're pulling the whole thing down, huh?
Well, yeah, really, the intro is really good. Did you want to hear something specifically from the speech?
All right, let's play the intro a little bit.
Okay, it's not Obama.
It's not? Intro. No, we want to hear President Obama.
Yeah.
All right, well, if you come up with something there, buzz me in the headphones and we'll put it on. I just wanted people to hear kind of the tone that the president is taking these days if they haven't heard it. Back to the phones. Teresa's next. Teresa, you bet. Welcome to the show.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing great.
Yes, we subsidize oil. 34 years ago, I lived in Europe right out of college. I worked with the military as a civilian. I was in West Berlin before the wall came down. I was in Mannheim and Heidelberg. And we subsidized gasoline. We would go to our own special gas stations to get a special rate.
Mm-hmm.
We paid about half what they paid for gasoline. And guess what else the military subsidized in the United States? Cigarettes. You could get really cheap cigarettes.
Uh-huh.
And I don't think the subsidizing is always the answer. If I couldn't take my car to work in Europe, I could take their light rail.
Right.
I could take, and I think that we should do what they're doing, charge the proper, amount for gasoline and put it into public transit. But here in Texas, with all the money that we get from oil, they don't encourage that, and they spread vicious lies and about mass transit. And, people are afraid to get on mass transit for fear they're going to see somebody of a different race, and that's just really scary to them. And I think they think if they get on mass transit, then they're poor.
Yeah, Teresa, we have so little public transportation infrastructure outside of the airlines, which are not public. They're private businesses, but they are open to the public, as it were.
And if anything should happen, we should build that. We should build our public transportation so people can get to the airport without leaving their cars parked at the airport.
Yeah.
I mean, in every other major city, in London or whatever, you don't need to. I mean, you take public transit from your hotel to the airport to catch your plane or whatever. But I did want to say, that there is a campaign by the conservatives. I'm looking. I mean, every week practically lately in my weekly paper, Kay Bailey Hutchison is giving her point of view, and she quoted Stephen Chu and said, he says, somehow we have to figure out how to boost the price of gasoline to the levels of Europe. And she says, talk about out of touch. What he should be doing is taping America's natural resources to assure that we have the energy we need and halt skyrocketing costs.
Mm-hmm.
But I think what you're saying is, I think she meant tapping, that we don't necessarily have all those natural resources. We should be tapping our alternative energy.
Well, like most things, balance is important, and diversification is important. So I don't see that we're going to cease our consumption of fossil fuels, nor do I advocate that.
Mm-hmm.
But we have a very, very unbalanced profile of energy use in this country. And we have a very unbalanced profile in many other things, as we were, you and I were just talking about. Public transportation infrastructure is woefully inadequate. I read an article the other day with a construction attorney. He specializes in construction and doing legal work for companies involved in heavy construction. So he is somebody who has decades and decades of experience in that industry, in that business, and he says that America's infrastructure is poor and getting worse. Mm-hmm. I mean, that is a real indictment from somebody in that business. Our infrastructure is poor and getting worse.
Yeah.
And that at some point the bill comes due for that. At some point we are not able to compete, and we are irreparably hampered by our lack of proper infrastructure in this country.
Right,
and
businesses don't want to pay for it.
Right,
and money's tight. People would, of course, like to spend it on something else. I guess they've got their blinders on. They don't want to see it.
Right. Great to have you, Teresa. Thanks for the call.
Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.
Okay, 713-526-5738. Tag Randy and Mark are holding. We've got three lines open. If you want to get in, talk about President Obama's strategy. Currently, appears to be a going Reagan strategy, an optimistic strategy, and then also talking about his... you know, what oil prices are going to do to his campaign, and do you believe that he is going to be dependent on low oil prices to get reelected, or basically it's not going to matter? Yeah, Doyle, go ahead.
Yeah, I got a 2-minute clip.
Okay, let's do it. Let's just kind of let you hear what the president's sounding like in his speeches that he was giving up in Michigan. Okay, here we go. This is President Obama a couple days ago.
I've got to admit, it's been funny to watch some of these folks completely try to rewrite history now that you're back on your feet. The same folks who said if we went forward with our plan to rescue Detroit, you can kiss the American automotive industry goodbye. Now they're saying we were right all along. You've got folks saying, well, the real problem is what we really disagreed with was the workers. They all made it out like bandits. The saving the auto industry was just about paying back the unions. Really? I mean, even by the standards of this town, that's a load of you-know-what. About 700,000 retirees had to make sacrifices on their health care benefits that they had earned. A lot of you saw hours reduced or pay or wages scaled back. You gave up some of your rights as workers. Promises were made to you over the years that you gave up for the sake and survival of this industry, its workers, their families. You want to talk about sacrifice? You made sacrifices. This wasn't an easy thing to do. Let me tell you, I keep on hearing these same folks talk about values all the time. You want to talk about values? Hard work, that's a value. Looking out for one another, that's a value. The idea that we're all in it together and I'm my brother's keeper and sister's keeper, that's a value. They're talking about you like you're some special interest that needs to be beaten down. Since when are hard-working men and women who are putting in a hard day's work every day, since when are they special interests? Since when is the idea that we look out for one another a bad thing? And I remember my old friend Ted Kennedy. He used to say, what is it about working men and women they find so offensive?
That's President Obama speaking to the United Auto Workers a few days ago. And, you know, what do you think? It sounds to me like the president's got a little more oomph in his step the other day. And appears to be speaking to audiences with a bit more energy than he has in the past couple of years. 713-526-5738, 526-KPFT, of course, talking about the sacrifices that were made in the reorganization of the auto companies, where pensioners and retirees had to take cuts to promised benefits, benefits that had been promised to them in the course of their employment. And, of course, the unions came out with stakes in the auto companies as well, but still rank-and-file retirees essentially were forced to take haircuts in their promised benefits. Next up is Randy on line 5. Randy, welcome to the New Capital Show.
Hello, Leo.
Hey, how are you?
I think the price of oil is certainly going to be a Republican talking point.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if it's going to amount to very much more than that. You see, I keep hearing and reading about all these polls saying that the American public are not necessarily swallowing what the Republican Party is putting out.
So why is the media,
Because they belong to the Republican Party. They're taking orders from the Republican Party, taking orders from their corporate masters.
But, I mean, this is the New York Times, which you know.
Oh, do you think they're liberal?
Well, I think they're in a different class than Fox News. And Helene Cooper saying that the president's reelection fate is increasingly tied to the price Americans are paying at the gas pump.
And I think people like that are spending too much time listening to Fox News.
Mm-hmm.
I think there are way too many columnists and writers and bloggers and even people on other networks that spend too much time listening to Fox, and they don't spend enough time listening to other sources.
Mm-hmm.
But every time some Republican comes out and says the American people do not want that, then we hear about another poll saying that in fact the American people do want that. Like when the Republicans are screaming that, contraception is bad, and there comes out with this poll that says more than 90% of American women use contraception. So
right. I mean,
the American people are starting to figure out that the Republican Party is lying.
Yeah, I think your point is really well taken, that so many of these points, when you actually look at the figures and where the support lies, often it's very overwhelmingly in one direction and on the other side. I mean, the contraception point that you make is really very, very appropriate. And we've seen it for several years, Randy, on the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq, the public has wanted withdrawal of troops at a more rapid rate than what the politicians have been willing to state.
Right. Oh, you remember Andrew Breitbart?
Yes, I saw that he passed away.
Uh huh. It says at first it said he died of natural causes,
mm-hmm.
and then it said he had a bad heart.
Yeah, right.
Insert your own punchline.
Yeah. Randy, great to have you. Thanks for the call.
You too. Later.
Andrew Breitbart was the provocateur blogger who, I think, he was responsible for several of those filmed incidents where that guy would go into either Planned Parenthood or some of these government offices and kind of entrap people into talking with him in outlandish ways that would cast the organization in a poor light. And so Andrew Breitbart, one of that gang, passed away, I guess, over the last 24 hours in Los Angeles. 713-526-5738. Next up is Mark. Mark, welcome to the New Capital Show.
Thanks, Leo.
Yep.
I think you're going to have to put me down in the columns that gives the president a little bit of sway over these oil prices.
Uh-huh.
When you look at previous caller mentioned the CFTC. These banks wouldn't be able to speculate in that market, driving prices where they are if deregulation hadn't occurred.
Yeah, but Mark, I mean, Mark, isn't the price of oil set at a global level? I mean, even for whatever goes on in the CFTC is the...
Right, couldn't you keep global actors out of the speculating with tighter regulation?
I don't know. I mean, you know, the situation in the 1970s was OPEC controlled the price, right? I mean, it was controlled by a very, very relatively few number of people in the Middle East.
Have a large percentage of the global oil?
Yeah, they have a large percentage of the global oil reserves. Of course, we've seen production spread to so many other areas since the 1970s, and oil is produced in many different parts of the world. But I mean, it's really hard to say. Should prices be set by more people or fewer people? Should we go back to those who simply are in control of the tap? Should there be no speculation whatsoever going on in these markets? It's not a simple question to me.
Our government would implement a dividend and fees program, then gradually ramping up the cost of gas at the pumps would decrease demand.
Tell everybody what that is, because it's a great idea, and from what I've seen, it's really the suggestion about how to deal with long-term pricing of gasoline that many economists are in favor of. So tell everybody about that plan.
That plan would have all sources of carbon at their sources taxed by, you know, at a ton per ton rate.
Right.
And so that the industries themselves would be forced to pay and then pass on to their consumers in the various formats the cost of the carbon that they're putting into the economy,
right,
and into the atmosphere.
So the idea is that you will pay a higher price at the pump, right? Because there's going to be a carbon tax, and then there's a dividend.
So the dividend would be uniform for every citizen in the country, essentially. So in effect, high users of carbon would pay more for their high use, but then they wouldn't be necessarily as compensated for it, in the dividend that was paid back to everybody.
Yeah. But the main idea,
low
Mark,
users would be rewarded for their thrift.
Right, and additionally, the main idea is that all of the tax, rather than being used for some other project, would be dividended back to the American public. 100% dividended back. So the idea is that we're not taking money out of the pockets of American consumers. We're simply changing their consumption habits to move them toward, as you point out, on a gradual basis, toward alternative forms of energy. And I think it's a great idea. I mean, I think we should be moving in that direction.
And that would affect the price of gas at the pump. And if Obama were to implement something like that, then we would see gas prices change. So that's why I say that I think that Obama has influence on the price at the pump. There are regulatory measures he could make to change it. And he's just seeming to let the market forces take control.
Do you think he's waiting maybe for a second term to implement that kind of plan? I mean, it seems to me possible that that's what's going on, that he doesn't want to come out with something as radical as you know, tax and dividend.
No, not going into an election, but coming out of an election, he could also want to go into the, the cap-and-trade system as well, and that a lot of his financial backers are more supportive of.
Yep. Mark, great to have you. Thanks for the call, and thanks for
the
ideas. Okay, just a couple of minutes left. Let's see if we can get to Tag and to Gene. And Tag is going to be first. Tag, welcome.
Yeah, I think Obama could be held responsible for gas prices if they continue to make unrest in other countries where oil's produced. I mean, that's a pretty easy one there, and I think somebody alluded to that earlier. This whole thing with Iran seems like just another mocked-up disaster waiting to happen. And our government has a lot to do with that, and whether they're building nuclear bombs, I think that's a big question. We know there were no weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, so that's been put on the table. But, I think there's another question here. We're trying to weigh Obama's chances against Republicans based on oil prices. And when you ask anybody if they would have rather seen Sarah Palin and John McCain, and, you know, especially the Republicans, they say no, they would have never wanted to see Sarah Palin in the White House. And I think when you look at the choices this year and ask Republicans, none of the Republicans really want to see Romney or Santorum. I mean, I use an absolute there. I mean, in general, the Republicans don't want either one of those. So they're right back to where they were in the last cycle. And I think that's really going to dictate what happens to Obama. I just don't think the Republicans have a strong enough candidate, regardless what the situation is.
And at this point in time, what do you see happening to Congress? Do you have any kind of prediction tag? Because you seem to have a pretty strong opinion and seem pretty well plugged into the currents that are going through presidential politics right now. You know, what do you think happens at the level of Congress in November?
We've got some Republicans dropping out of Congress this year and going to leave their seats open. And, you know, I would hope that we get back to a Democratic Congress again, because I think in a second term, Obama could do a lot better with a Democratic Congress, whereas when he first came in, he was trying to, you know, get everybody on the same track, you know, and the Republicans were going to have nothing to do with it. So, you know, they say, well, yeah, he had the ability the first 2 years. He was trying to get some consensus in Washington, and the Republicans were going to have nothing to do with it. So I think that's really what happened. But I think in the final 4 years of his reign, I don't think you'll see that. I think you'll go ahead and try to get some more of his policies enacted, mm-hmm. which I think would be a great thing.
Tag, great to have you. Thanks for the call, as always.
Thanks, Leo. I appreciate
okay.
it. Have a good day.
Gene is next. Gene, welcome to the New Capital Show.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate it.
Great to have you. What's on your
Thank
mind?
Thank you. Well, I do agree with Randy, for instance, mm-hmm. that people should certainly not be using Fox as their only source of news. I tune in about once a week just so I know what the other side is thinking.
Yeah, that's good. The concept you're talking about is called confirmation bias.
Thank you.
When you seek out information that confirms what you already think, you are seeking confirmation bias. And,
absolutely.
And
I hadn't heard that
yes.
term before, but that makes perfect
sense. And when you are unable to take in information that differs from your viewpoint, that's called cognitive dissonance.
That sounds right. It does indeed sound
so,
right.
So sorry to interrupt you, Gene. Go ahead.
No, that's fine. And I certainly do not think, and I've been actually saying it for many years, that the price of oil in this country, gasoline, whatever, has been artificially low forever.
Yeah.
So it ain't Obama. I'm ecstatic that it's as low
but,
as it is.
But do you think that, you know, rank and file independents, people who are in the middle and whose votes are going to, as they always do, decide elections, are they going to hold the president responsible for gas prices?
That's certainly possible. That is certainly a possibility. I'm going to discuss it with as many conservatives as I possibly can. Yeah. I believe in getting the word out myself. Now, I will say this, however, in fact, you might find this interesting, about 2 months prior to the election, when Obama was elected, I actually had a really staunch conservative I just met that evening get really ticked off at me when he found out that I might vote for Obama.
Mm-hmm.
And he, to the point where he slammed his beer, brand new beer, down on the table and stormed out.
Oh,
you know?
That's terrible.
Well, you think maybe I drank that beer? Yeah, I did. I wasn't going to waste
yeah.
it, you know. And I did eventually vote for Obama. However, he's not perfect, of course. Who is? And everything that Obama has done has not just totally pleased me. And I can say this, that I'm actually not that impressed when he makes speeches to unions, because I was a member of a union once and was not happy with the union.
Mm-hmm.
They look like they're involved in a lot of their own big money, and when he starts pandering to unions, it looks like politics as usual.
Gene, great to have you. Got to run along here. Thanks for the call.
Okay, thank you.
Let's try to get Alan in here on line four. Alan, welcome.
Yes, Leo, it's been a long time.
Yeah,
since
great to have you.
I think Obama has a problem. I think this country has a problem. I'm just going to mention it.
Mm-hmm.
I think capitalism is in crisis, and we don't talk about that. We don't talk about the concentration of wealth. We don't. And all the way down the line, there's just an enormous amount of money.
But Alan, to be fair to the president, it seems that he has been talking about it in the context of tax policy. When the president has been talking about the Buffett rule and raising taxes on those making $1 million and above. And trying to give the middle class a break, It seems to me that that has been his way of talking about the growing disparity in income between the you know, call it the 1% and the 99%. Is that not right? Have you not heard the or you don't agree that he's...
I agree, but you're talking about something on the margins. It's going to take an enormous change of the philosophy of this country for people to, you know, they just don't understand what's really going on. He's going to hit a brick wall somewhere along the line here, and there's not going to be, you know, half of the production manufacturing base in this country has disappeared since the 80s.
Yeah.
And there's just a slight bit. Yeah, he's probably getting a little kick right now on, you know, on improvement in manufacturing things, but he's going to run a brick wall. It's just not there.
Alan, thanks for the call.
Well, wait a minute.
No, I'm out of time. I'm out of time, my friend.
Okay,
thank you. Great to have you. Right, Doyle, we're out, right?
Yeah, we got about 20, 30 seconds.
20 or 30 seconds. Johnny and Brad, I am sorry that we are not going to get to you today. Next week, try again, and we will get you on first thing. That does it for another edition of the New Capital Show. I want to thank all of you for participating in such a lively conversation today. I enjoyed it and hope you did too. Thanks for spending a part of your day with us, but please stay tuned. Coming up next is our local news, followed at 4:30 by Al Jazeera's news half hour. And then at 5 o'clock comes Democracy Now!, the rebroadcast of this morning's Democracy Now! From 5 to 6 p.m. Take care.
Support the arts and help a local blues musician in his battle against cancer. Join us at Country Playhouse Thursday, March 1st at 8 p.m. for a special benefit performance of the play Proposals by Neil Simon to honor our dear friend Leo Astor. Leo was recently diagnosed with stage 4 pancreatic cancer, and you can help. Proposals recalls one perfect afternoon in the summer of 1953. The housekeeper Clemma narrates the story of the Hines clan gathering for the last time at their retreat in the Poconos. If you enjoyed The Help, you'll love Proposals. Tickets and concessions for this performance will be by donation, with all proceeds to benefit Leo. There'll also be a silent auction featuring jewelry and plenty of other special surprises. Don't miss this chance to help Leo in his fight against cancer. Join us at the Proposals Benefit for Leo Astor, Thursday, March 1st at Country Playhouse, 12802 Queensbury Lane near City Center in Town and Country. Call 713-467-4497 or visit the website at countryplayhouse.org. This is KPFT Houston.
First you listen, then you fall in love, you have your favorite programs that you listen to each and every week, and finally you do the right thing by calling in that pledge of support to KPFT. You feel great, but guess what? Your job, it's not done just yet. You still need to fulfill your promise to KPFT by sending that pledge payment today, and when you do, you take that often forgotten last step. Don't wait any longer. KPFT depends on you.
I am the voice of Pacifica Radio.
أنا صوت راديو بيسيفيكا على KPFT 90.1 FM في هيوستن.
ونسكيزه 90.1 FM KPFT هيوستن.
يا واد هي Pacifica Radio KPFT 90.1 FM.
Oh hi Pacifica Toy kissing scene.
चलिए आज हम सब मिलकर के इस धरती पे शांति के लिए.
चुन तुम नमः लिंग शिथर चाहिए लिंग डाउन.